There are, in addition to that, probably between 10 and 20 who are in a mission school there and are unwilling to leave for much the same ways that the much same reasons that the missionaries in Uganda were unwilling to leave. But the number has been shrunk way down. I ought to say so. I'm not misunderstood on this. There are some dual nationals, probably as many as 1,000 dual nationals. This is Americans who are married to Iranians and who are not likely to leave, probably don't want to leave.
Christopher, what is the physical condition of our citizens in terms of food, a place to sleep, health care, and is there any protection against these howling mobs coming in now, in addition to those that are in there right now in their cars?
Well, the students are, quote, students who are in control of the embassy, are preventing others from coming in, and they're maintaining discipline within the embassy. The condition of our people is roughly as follows. They are kept in separate rooms or separate places and are unable to talk to each other. There may be a small group of them who are together, but by and large they're physically separated, which after 12 days is itself a matter of tension. A number of them are bound hand and foot. Some of them are tied to chairs. They're no longer blindfolded, as far as we can tell. They have had some treatment from a doctor. Some of those who have had transient illnesses apparently have had some treatment from a doctor. Our best indication is that while their physical distress is not acute, they're mentally very tired and under a great deal of pressure. Yes.
Is the Shah going to be leaving pretty soon, and what happens when he leaves and goes back to Mexico?
Well, the Shah is here for medical treatment, and I don't know what his plans are as far as leaving. He said the other day that he was willing to leave, but he coupled that with a statement from his doctors that he was not in any condition to leave. The effect of his departure is one of the great unknowns. There's some indication that the students will regard that, or Homany will regard that, as an important event. There was a ticker item just before I came over that the students would regard our letting him leave to be a great provocation. So that's one of those matters that we'll have to study as carefully as we can and try to calibrate. But you're dealing with what President Sadat called a lunatic, and it's very hard to estimate what the response will be.
Does the State Department anticipate similar occurrences of this nature in the future in other countries?
Absolutely not. I think the outpouring of international response against this makes it quite unlikely that this will happen elsewhere. Nevertheless, we're conscious of the need to increase the security as far as we can in our embassies, but we can never get to the place where we can defend an embassy against a mob. We can give them time to destroy the equipment. Most important, we can give them time to call the authorities. But I think around the world, we're going to have to continue to operate relying on the host country to provide protection. Just as you governors, and perhaps you've been mayors, know that around the country, police forces are often called upon to defend consulates or to protect the embassies around the country. I'll take one more.
What is the economic situation in Iran? No government disarray, but how unstable can we judge the economic situation?
Now, Bill Miller can address this more fully, but I judge Iran to be unstable in every respect. The economy is in tatters, held together only by their sales of oil. Politically, they're largely without a government, and there are minority groups within the country that are causing a great deal of difficulty for Homany. Unquestionably, that is one of the bases for the action they've taken here, to divert attention from the domestic problems that they have. Thank you all for your courtesy and consideration.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Bill Miller, Secretary of the Treasury. I just want to cover a couple more points that perhaps Charles Duncan Warren Christopher did not touch upon. A couple of actions have been taken this week in this circumstance that you have noted, but I just want to call them again to your attention. On Monday, the President, acting under the Trade Expansion Act, ordered the discontinuance of the importation of crude oil from Iran. There had been American purchases of crude to the extent of about 900,000 barrels a day, of which about 700,000, either in the form of crude or product refined from that crude, had been reaching this country. The other 200,000 barrels were being transshipped to third countries. The purpose of that action was just to remove, in this situation, any perception that the availability or lack of availability of Iranian oil had any relevance as a bargaining chip or as a lever upon the United States and its actions. Wherever those perceptions may have been, either in the Iranian mind or in minds of opinions here or elsewhere, the President wanted to make it clear that we were not being constrained in our efforts to concentrate on the main issue, which is the prompt return of the hostages, because of any possibility that we were dependent upon that oil. The action, of course, means that to the extent of 700,000 barrels of oil, we will need either to acquire that from other sources, or we will need to curtail our domestic demand so that we will not need that much oil. It is certainly our hope and our urging that the American people will respond by restraining domestic demand, and that we will, in fact, therefore have no economic effect from this particular event. The most worst-case situation is that the oil would be obtained at slightly higher prices, but that should have negligible effect upon our economy. We currently use about 8.5 million barrels a day. The amount that is sourced from Iran previously would be about 4%, and it would take modest amount of conservation or substitution for us to handle that situation. The second thing I'd like to point out is the action taken on Wednesday. On Wednesday morning, very early, we were informed of an announcement from Bani Sadr, the acting or supervisor of the foreign ministry, that the Iranian government would be transferring its funds in American banks and branches. And the statement had many forms, but seemed to be first couched in terms of moving the funds to other countries that were not pursuing American attitudes, but also may have had the overtone of trying to disrupt markets and to create a financial instability. As a matter of fact, within moments of that announcement, the dollar began to decline on foreign exchange markets that were then open in Europe. And for example, the dollar against the D-mark dropped from about 179 to 176. Within a very short time, since we had anticipated that such actions might take place, we had put on a monitoring system to see if any transfers were being made, and had initiated the procedure so that by 8 a.m. that morning, the President had issued an order which blocked the transfer of assets, balances, deposits owned by the government of Iran or any of its entities, and we were therefore able to counter that particular move. The purpose of our action was to be sure that we did not allow disruptions in financial markets, to make sure that large deposits were not transferred without making provision for American rights and claims for the payment of amounts due to American firms or citizens, and to make sure that assets were held and reserved that could be used to settle whatever claims may come out of these incidents. The order reached all American banks in this country, all foreign banks with branches in this country, and it reached the overseas branches and subsidiaries of U.S. companies. We're still assembling data on how much money was blocked in this process. Our information is accurate only as to the Federal Reserve, where about $1.3 billion of Treasury notes were held. But other banks did not have accurate accounting in this country and have been getting an inflow of information from overseas, and we are getting daily responses. We've immediately taken other steps quickly to make sure that what we intended is accomplished and what we did not intend is not inadvertently accomplished. We've clarified to make sure it's understood that we are not interrupting normal trade. We are not blocking the shipment or sale of food or medicine, items of human necessity, which we are not feel appropriate to block at this particular time. We've also released the bank accounts of the Iranian embassy so that it can run its normal day-to-day activities. And we will be doing other things, perhaps the most important of which was yesterday, when we allowed American banks to offset their claims against Iran with the deposits that they hold, so that we'd be sure of having a net covered position and would not run the risk of seeing those assets dissipated in any way. So we've done those things, and I think the response around the world has been rather gratifying. You do hear people in the private sector who show some nervousness about these events, but the dollar immediately stabilized, returned to its prior value. Markets have been quiet. There has been no after effect. The foreign ministers of the Arab League were meeting in Tunis, and the comments there were quite favorable. The Minister Saud of the Saudi Arabia indicated he thought the decision was sound and that they had no reason to be concerned. The only negative comments came from representatives of Iraq and Libya. And we have continued to communicate. The State Department was very effective in communicating with governments around the world to make sure they understood the purpose and the reason for this, that we were not initiating any disruptive measures in markets. Instead, we were taking protective measures as to American interests. I think that's just about the whole story, and I'd be happy to respond to any of your questions.
Mr. Secretary, this question has been talked around all day but never asked and therefore never answered. If our goal in ceasing purchases of oil from Iran is to fully free this country from any dependence, directly or indirectly, on that oil, why did the President not revise down by approximately 8% our quota for what we will allow to be imported from foreign sources into this country of oil?
Well, that's a very important question, which we should answer. The purpose of his action was not to reduce by that amount by fiat the use of oil products in this country, but to remove the direct relationship of that oil to the perception that it might be a lever in the negotiations between the government of Iran and our own government in this circumstance. We oil is fungible. If that oil is still in the market of the world, then we can replace purchases. And it was never intended that this act that dealt with the relationship and the perceptions in Iran was a presidential act to arbitrarily reduce requirements here. What we have instead called for, and what the President has called for, is the hope that Americans will voluntarily and through complete cooperation make those reductions themselves so that we will not have to replace that oil. But I think in the state of the of our economy with the recession underway, to suddenly have another shock on availability of oil would be an unwise move. And I think we want to take that now in a more cooperative atmosphere by asking your help of how we can bring that usage down. If we can demonstrate, if every American automobile were driven 3 miles less per day, as Charles Duncan probably told you, we would offset all of that oil. And we should do that in any case. Yes, sir.
Would there not be something other than just the verbal support? We've got from all these nations around the world. There must be something more important than that. All those nations began to embargo any imports from Iran.
The delicacy of this situation is such that if we should organize or even encourage a boycott of Iran, that could be interpreted by these unstable people as an act of hostility that they could take out by executing hostages. Now, that's not rational or normative behavior, but that is a potential response that we dare not risk at this point. We are asking, and as probably has already been discussed, we are asking our allies and associates in the IEA to make more forceful efforts on establishing goals for reduction generally without it being targeted at this point at Iran. And I think any of the acts that we take that seem to represent to them a ganging up of nations to punish them could result in us not accomplishing the objective, and that is the safe return of those hostages. Once that has taken place, I think our options are much wider.
So what happens with the Iranian students that are in this country, about 50,000? Some say they're going to run out of money, and if they do, then that makes them illegal aliens, and then we send them back to prevent them from looking like hostiles.
Very good point. We have 50,000 Iranian students who now will be required to register with the Immigration Service. That's already started. Many of these students undoubtedly are unfriendly. Many of them, however, are in proper status as students, themselves might be considered somewhat refugees from this situation who have come here prior to the revolution and are not in sympathy with it and are potentially threatened if they should be thrown out of this country and asked to return to that circumstance. And I think our sense of human values are such that we cannot lash out at innocent people. And until we sort them out and find out what status they're in, whether they're legal, illegal, and whether they are properly here or not properly here, and what other possible violations of law they may have, I believe, as a government of constitutional law and a high sense of human rights, that we must, again, not take actions to punish the innocent. So it is our intention to continue to let the minor amounts of money involved flow to those students for their sustenance until we can sort this out. I would also point out that if we don't let the money flow to them as aliens in the country, they can turn right around and apply for welfare, and that's not exactly the image I want us to have, that we cut off their money and put them on your payroll. And I'm sure the governors here will appreciate it.
Mr. Secretary, does this president's ban on imports, does, you know, banning the import of the crude, does that also apply to, say, crude that's imported by another foreign country, refined in that foreign country? Does the ban apply to the refined product that would come here that originated in Iran?
As you know, oil being fungible, we really cannot trace it. And once the crude oil gets into the world market and it becomes product, we will not try to ban it because we wouldn't be able to trace it, with one exception. Crude was coming into the Virgin Islands, which is not part of our custom territory, and so the import ban does not apply to coming to the Virgin Islands. It's a legal technicality. But we are going to block the product from that refinery, one refinery, from coming to the States because we can track that. And besides, that's U.S. territory, so that would violate what we're trying to accomplish. But we were not trying to accomplish either a forced conservation program through action related to the Iranian situation, or to create disturbances in world oil markets. We certainly find from this incident, reinforcing my deep conviction that this nation is in deep peril because of its dependence, undue dependence, upon fragile and insecure sources of oil. So quite apart from this issue, we need to do the reduction of consumption, but we should do that on its merits in an orderly way, and maybe we're going to have to do some bold things to accomplish that, but we should do those in their own time sequence and properly and with your involvement, as I see it. And I hope we can all accomplish that. If we could reduce our usage by 1 million barrels a day, which I don't think is unreasonable, if we could get some of our allies to make more vigorous efforts, we could suddenly change the balance of supply and demand, put some discipline into the spot market, and begin to get better control of the situation as we make the shift to less dependence in any case, which we must do.
One of the marketing tools that maybe I should have asked the Deputy Secretary of State is our concern for the life of these hostages. What would you guess as to the odds of execution of those hostages there?
Well, I suppose we must all have our viewpoints on that. I would point out only two sides of the coin. History shows that when hostages survive for a substantial period of time, most likely they survive. They may be there a long time, but most likely they survive. On the other hand, we're dealing with people who are trigger happy, whose nerves will get fragile, and who could decide to do some rather irrational things, and therefore the risk is very high that they might start a series of executions to put pressure, and this is a very, very deep worry. So based on historical experience, one would not be optimistic but hopeful. Based on the nature, one cannot even be hopeful in this case. So I think it just keeps us all worried every moment of the day, because some mistake I could make, some statement I could make, might trigger an event that I would feel very, very responsible for. So that's why we're behaving the way we are. We can proceed with firmness. We can proceed with American support and allied support, but we must proceed with a certain amount of dignity and restraint if we're going to accomplish our purpose.
Jack?
Well, excuse me, yes.
Yes, I think we've all found last summer, we've been preaching conservation and encouraging gasoline conservation for several years, and until there was actually a cut in supply, those programs really had little effect. There was a continual increase in consumption of gasoline, and suddenly there's a decrease in supply. For a short period of time, there's some chaos and adjustment for the American people, and very quickly, in a matter of a few months, the demand for gasoline in this country dropped to meet that reduced supply. We've been operating on reduced supplies for several months now, with very little inconvenience to the public, if any at all. And I go back to the governor of Arkansas' statement that the most effective conservation tool we've seen in the last 3 years is a reduction in supply, actual crude availability. And is there consideration of reduction of import quotas? And if that would occur, would that not be a positive effect on the American economy?
I think we're looking at all those things. As I said, we may need to take some bolder actions to assure that we reduce this dependence. But I don't think they should be taken in the context of the purpose of the Iranian cutoff. They should be taken in the context of what you're talking, a permanent effect done in, I think, perhaps in coming weeks or months, as we are able to assess our capacity to handle this fairly and equitably. There's two fundamental ways we can go if we reduce quantities. We can go the way of making the product more expensive and therefore rationing it through price, which has its inequities. These are the only two choices I know. We can ration it by making it more expensive, and therefore the higher and better purposes are used and the others are discarded, or we can ration it physically, and that has all kinds of problems. So I think we have to grapple a little more with parameters of our choice before we make those final choices. Thank you all very much.